The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2010 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2010. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the Internet. If you would like to find out more about the work of ACCS, please visit our website at www.accsedu.org. To order additional talks from this conference, please visit the ACCS website and click on Conferences. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
Well, good afternoon and welcome, and we'll go ahead and get started. My name is Cindy Waters, and you're at the workshop Exercising Dominion in the Classroom, Converting Chaos to Calm. And I thank you all for coming today. I know it's been a long but exciting day. Your brain has probably been trying to process more than it can handle. I know we're all trying to just think of things that we're going to want to implement as soon as we get back into our classroom next year. And so I appreciate you coming at the end of the day. They are trying to work on the air conditioner so that it won't stay quite this warm for the rest of the time. So we hope and we can pray that the air conditioner starts working as well. Let's pray. Dear gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for this day. We thank you for this conference, for how good it has been and how good you have been towards us. And Lord, now I just pray that you would help me communicate things that I have learned throughout the years and that my communication would be clear and well understood. Lord, please cover my mistakes. Just if anyone doesn't hear something correctly, Lord, please cover that. And just we pray that you would give us your wisdom and grant us your peace in this hour. It's in your Son's blessed and holy name we pray. Amen. All right. I wanted to just give you a brief introduction as to who I am and how I got to where I enjoy organizing things. I know this morning Doug Wilson talked about there's either organizer people or creative people, and I do not fall into the creative people type. How many people in here think that they fall into that creative type? Okay. How many are much more of the organizer people? Good. All right. I began my professional career as a CPA, and I worked for an international accounting firm for roughly 6 years. During that time, I worked both in the auditing staff and a consulting staff, and I was able to see a lot of organizations and get kind of an insider's perspective as to how decisions are made through an organization, how processes work throughout an organization, a paper flow, what is an efficient way of doing things. When you work for a worldwide organization, often there are standard ways that you have to do it. And it's not necessarily that one way is better than the other, but it just makes the whole organization more efficient if you adopt certain methods. So I will just kind of show you some of the methods that I have adopted throughout the last 6 years. I'm currently the sixth grade math teacher, and I also teach classical roots and spelling at Cary Christian School. So God used the time as a CPA to really prepare me now for this next stage of life. I did not think I was going to be a math teacher. If you would have asked me in high school, I knew I was good at math, but I said there was no way I ever wanted to be a math teacher. That was just not something I wanted to do. But God had other plans, and we homeschooled our children for a while and then chose to enroll them at Cary Christian School. And at one point, I just got a call asking me to be a parent in the classroom in a second grade classroom and help out the teacher, be her assistant for about 8 weeks at the end of a school year, never thinking that that would then become a full-time teaching position. From second grade, wanted to go up to a higher level. Just my kids were getting older, and I wanted to go older. But God had other plans, and he brought me down to first grade, which was just a scary thought. I don't know if some of you are scared of first grade, but I was definitely scared of first grade. Came down to first grade, but what was so great about that year was God allowed me to come alongside just an incredible woman who was just a seasoned teacher, and I just learned so much from her. She just had such a vision. So where I was assisting her in the dailiness of life, she had that look 30 days out, 3 months out, 3 years out, 30 years out for the children. And it just gave me a completely different perspective. So if some of you have the ability to either be mentored by another teacher or go and assist for a while before you take on a full-time teaching role, I definitely think it's a wonderful advantage, and I don't regret any of the time that I spent with her. All right, just now that you know a little bit about me, I'd like to find out a little bit about you. How many in here are brand new teachers? You've never taught before, but you're going to start teaching next year. Okay. How many have taught for about 1 to 3 years? Okay, vast majority. And how about maybe 4 to 5 years? And then over 5 years? Well, good. All right. How many people in here are phonics stage teachers? And we define that as kindergarten through second. How about grammar school, 3rd through 5th graders? Okay. Logic school, 6th through 8th? And rhetoric school, 9th through 12th? All right, great. Do we have any just parents or people that are non-educators but just want to learn some more organizing tips? Well, welcome to you, too. One of the A parent stopped me at the grocery store and said, "Oh, I saw that you're speaking on bringing a room under control and going from chaos into calm. You've had both my twin boys. You know what that's like." And I said, "Oh, that's really not what I'm talking about." So if you thought that I'm talking more about discipline issues, that's not really the intent of my workshop. There have been some other speakers who I think are going to be speaking about discipline, and maybe if they've already spoken, you can probably order their session. Mine is much more about bringing order to your classroom so that your classroom is efficient and learning can go on uninhibited. And I do think that discipline issues go down when you have a well-managed classroom. So that's my goal. I hope to have a brief question-answer period at the end. I'm also going to be available tonight on the tour at Cary Christian School. How many people are coming on the tour tonight? Oh, great. I am in room 207. Which if you look at our building, you'll be out on the football field for dinner. And if you look at the front of the building, I'm the very last room on the left on the second floor facing the football field. Feel free to come see me. You can kind of see how my room operates, how things are set up. Our building will have rooms that are set up as if we're starting school tomorrow. So you're welcome to come by then. I'd also just, you know, really when I go to a conference, sometimes you think that you want to walk away with just hundreds and hundreds of new ideas. I generally really feel like a conference is very successful if I walk away with maybe 3 good ideas. And so if I can get just a really great idea that I implement and actually use and put into practice, that to me means that I've had a really successful conference. So my desire here for you today is that you would walk away with one thing. Okay, so if something has you pondering new things, jot yourself some notes. My email address is on top of the notes. It's cwaters@carychristianschool.org, and you're free to email me as well. All right, I wanted to just start with a biblical perspective. I will be going through my outline, and I wanted to look at Creator God. And so when you look back at Genesis 1 and 2, you see that God takes that chaos or nothingness and commands things and creates things, brings them into being, and then he completes the task. He can sit and say, "It is good," and then he can sit and rest. And I think when we look at our classroom, some of you who are the brand new teachers, you're starting with nothingness. You don't really know what you have. And maybe you've been teaching for a long time, but you just feel like your room is chaotic and you want to bring some more structure to it. I am not one of those creative people. I think that We agreed when Doug said that there's two types of people, but I know I serve a creative God. There are many times where my administrator will come to me and just say, "Where in the world did you get that idea?" And I'll say, "I prayed for creativity and God showed me how to do something, or he pointed me in the direction, or I was reading a magazine at a doctor's office and boom, new idea." So I know we serve a creative God. So even if you don't feel like you're personally creative, pray for creativity. I had a friend of mine was a pastor's wife with six boys under 8 years old. And she used to just say, "We serve a creative God." And I got that in my head because she had to become very creative. So when you feel frustrated, when you don't know what to do in your area and you feel like everything is in a chaotic state, pray for creativity. And the Lord will bring you wisdom in that area. Proverbs 16:3 says, "To commit your works to the Lord and your thoughts will be established." So that is an important thing. Commit your year, commit your classroom to the Lord, and he will establish your thoughts. Proverbs 11:14 concerning counsel says, "Where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety." I like how the NAS puts it. "In the abundance of counselors, there is victory." And that's just a great verse to remember. You do not have to go this alone. If there are people that you can go to, the more I teach, the more I realize what I don't know. And for some of you who have taught a long time, you maybe feel that way too. And so I have gotten more and more just free to go to my administrator and say, "I really don't know how to handle this situation," or go to those seasoned professionals that have even more years of either teaching experience or just life experience for counsel. Most of the teachers that we find are willing to be in that mentoring role with another teacher. So sometimes you have not because you ask not. Another verse on counsel is, "Without counsel, plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established." Proverbs 14:23 says, "In all labor, there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty." I read a book once, or a magazine article or something, where I took a test, and it said I would rather read the book about organizing it than organizing, which I might rather read a book about how to clean my house or organize my house than actually clean it. And so that is something that is good for me to know. So in all labor, there is profit. There comes a time where you have to just do the labor. Mere or idle chatter leads only to poverty. So if you just talk about a great idea and do nothing, it's not going to come to full fruition of having your desired outcome. So you need to get in there and actually do the labor that's required. The last thing, as far as from a biblical perspective, I just want to leave you with Ecclesiastes 1:9 with a caveat. "That which has been is what will be, that which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun." What I'm about to share with you is not new material. This is almost, I talk to my husband, I say, it's almost, I feel bad about sharing some of these things because it's almost second nature to me. It just seems so simplistic. But what I have found in mentoring other teachers along the way is for some people that's just not an area that they have mastered or they struggle in organization. So if these are some things that you've heard before and you don't think any of this is new, I apologize for that. I will be borrowing from other authors and other people's ideas. Some of you in here on your free time like to read fiction or get a great novel. I like to read organizational books, which some of you that raise your hand that you were organizers, I have a feeling that you have a kindred spirit in that too. All right. The effective leader establishes vision and tone. Similar to a company's mission statement, if you don't know where you are headed, how are you going to know when you get there? Okay, so you need to know where you're headed and have a vision. Decide what type of teacher you want to be. Decide what kind of classroom you want to manage. Again, working with that one teacher who showed me what it was like to really have a vision for her classroom made me not desire to just go on a daily basis and just do the motions. I really wanted to have a vision for my classroom and be able to be a real confident guide that steers my students along the way. Proverbs 29:18 says, "Where there is no vision, the people are unrestrained, but happy is he who keeps the law." In another translation, or I've heard this paraphrased, "Without vision, people perish." If you have ever been within an organization where the leader does not lead and lacks vision, it is extraordinarily frustrating. And I think that that can become very frustrating for your students if they don't sense in you that you have that vision and that you know where you're heading in the classroom. Okay? So you can give them just much more confidence if you set that tone in your classroom. The next point is the effective leader determines their plan. Once you know where you're going or where you're headed, how are you going to get there? What steps are needed? When are you going to sit down and actually plan? Do you need a big picture plan and a more detailed plan? And when is that going to happen? The effective leader also implements procedures. Procedures should be very simple and well-defined, easily understood, consistent, and fair and reasonable. I teach my students how to staple every year. Now, it's not something that there's different, you know, there's one way of stapling that's better than another, but when I worked for that international accounting firm, every person worldwide was taught how to staple a certain way, and so from the time I've been 22 years old, I have stapled a certain way. Now, if I don't show them how to staple, I have 66 students. I'll come up, and there will be 66 different ways that they'll want to put their paper together and staple. So it's not that I'm necessarily trying to be, you know, very nitpicky, but I'm trying to train them so that it makes just our whole classroom run much more efficiently. And then the final one point is to communicate clearly. We have a saying at CCS, and you may have seen this in several of the notes, over-communication leads to success, under-communication leads to a mess. I'll say that one more time. Over-communication leads to success, under-communication leads to a mess. Now, what does it mean to over-communicate? That means when I'm communicating, I'm going to do it several ways, several times, over several days. I may have a note on my whiteboard that says, wear dress uniform on Thursday. I may send a parent email. All students are required to be in dress uniform on Thursday. It may be in an administrative note or letter that goes home that dress uniform is required. We may have the students model it. Gentlemen, what does dress uniform look like? Full dress uniform. Oh, Billy, stand up and tell me what dress uniform looks like for a boy. You know, dress shirt, tie, brown belt, or a belt, khaki pants, brown dress shoes. Very good. You know, Susie, will you stand up and demonstrate what dress uniform looks like for a girl? And we go over that and train that and communicate. So when you over-communicate with parents, generally they appreciate that. You're not bombarding them, but you're just wanting to make sure that what you need to happen is getting fully communicated. I think it causes a lot of frustration on the parents' and students' part when they feel like you have not communicated enough with them. The wise and efficient teacher also delegates efficiently. Tasks which can be delegated should be delegated. Now, there's certain things that you cannot delegate. I want to be the one teaching my class. I want to be the one talking with the parents. I want to be there for parent meetings. But can someone else clean my room? Yes, they can. Can somebody else copy? Yes, they can. And I want to just, I will spend a little bit of time. I often have parent volunteers in my room throughout the year. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I obtain those volunteers and a little bit later in our discussion. Also, the efficient teacher inspects and evaluates. Another saying that we've adopted is that you get what you inspect, not you get what you expect. So you have to regularly inspect, whether that's an announced thing that you're going to do, or just be by the way you consistently grade, or your expectations. Maybe you have to go see a locker. You think a science project is growing in there. It's time to inspect the locker. So you get what you inspect. And then the effective teacher also seeks improvement. Just by you being here at the conference shows and demonstrates that you desire to grow as a teacher. We have a policy that all our teachers are required to pursue professional certification within ACCS. And I know some of the other sessions may have talked about that. There's different levels that you can, as an accredited school, offer. And our school does ask and require for the teachers to start reading additional books, writing papers, learning more about classical Christian education. The teacher also should be reading, meeting with your mentor, or providing some accountability, and also seeking feedback from your students, from your peers, your colleagues, and administration and parents. All right, so what does this efficient classroom look like? And I want to try to get as practical as possible so that you leave here with some ideas. First, take wise use of your summer breaks. Develop an overall plan using your school calendar and dates. What I generally do is I take my planner, and whereas generally an open page would equal 1 week of plans, I make enough copies just to be able to do almost a very quick and dirty Q&D of my overall plan. So I'll sit down and I'll plan math out for each quarter for the entire year to make sure that I will complete my curriculum objectives before the end of the year. I take our school's calendar and put those dates in so that I know, okay, that's a school holiday. I'm not going to have class. That's an early release day. We have picture day that day. I'm probably going to lose some teaching time. And so I don't want to necessarily be testing on those days, and so I try to manage my schedule based on what I know the school's schedule is. That has just enormous benefits. Some people that I have worked with do not do that, and then I think that they feel like, oh, I spent too long on that, now I've got to catch up, and now I've got to rush through something else, and they always wind up playing catch up because they never had that real global plan. And sometimes your calendar does change from year to year based on just the way holidays fall. You might have an extra day one quarter that you didn't know. Maybe you want to plan for a speaker that day, or maybe you have fewer days and you need to try to figure out your schedule. So I try to, that's just a very nice, calm, not a very detailed plan. It's me at my kitchen table, big cup of coffee, just while my children are sleeping. Take an hour and just see, it's the flyover, bird view, okay? While I do this, I tend to call the people that I mentor and just say, hello, guess what I'm doing today? It's so wonderful, I have done my plan for math for the entire year. How is your plan coming? And that doesn't always go over very well, but they appreciate the call. But knowing that gives me tremendous, just a sense of peace and order, knowing that I know how my year will play out. Now, do I commit so much to that schedule that I can't budge? I don't. And I may look at it and just know, okay, that'll all work out, put it away. I maybe bring out that global plan once or twice a quarter just to make sure I'm still on track. But something that happened this year that did not happen, this is my sixth year of teaching in sixth grade, I taught a math lesson that I had taught for 5 other years and everything had gone fine. And for some reason, I either didn't teach the lesson well enough or the students came in with a different level of understanding. But we had a very frustrating day in math class with tears coming out of some of the top students. And just I knew that the kids were just so upset about math that day. And so I knew that I had the wiggle room in my schedule to then go in that next day and say, you know what? I prayed about it. God gave me a different way to teach this to you. We talked candy bars. They all loved it. Smiles all around. Celebrated with little tiny Hershey bars the next day. Everybody was so thrilled. I knew because I had my schedule planned ahead of time, I knew I had that flexibility in my schedule to accommodate that. Now, I had a writing assignment that the students had to complete, and I was amazed by how many students recalled that I had given up my plan and had backtracked to make sure that they had good understanding and that I had done that for them. That meant just a whole lot. But if I had not had a global plan, I really would not have known if I could take the time to do that. So I would really encourage you to get that kind of just real sketched out plan. Literally, when I'm doing math, I do, you know, lesson 125, test 126, 27. That's what I'm just trying to pencil in. Our school, once you hit seventh grade and on up, they have certain testing days. So, for example, math can only test on Monday unless you arrange with another teacher to swap a test day. So that helps you figure out, am I going to have enough grades? Do I get in all the right tests that I want to have? So that you're not at the very end of the quarter, oh, wow, I don't have enough grades. I'm going to cram everything I can in this last week or two of school. Because what happens is when the child has five or six of those teachers, that becomes very stressful for both the children and their families. Okay? All right. In using the summer research and read, that's a great time to be reading some of the classical Christian books. Rejuvenate. Take the time to go to the pool. Take the time to go to movies with friends, out to lunch. Those types of things that you may not be able to have the time during the, the school year to do. Identify volunteers. I tend to, over the summer, call different people and identify my volunteers. Now, some people will say, well, isn't that just great that you get a volunteer every day of the week in your classroom? Well, it is great, and I don't think I could do my job without the level of parental support I have. But it does take some work on my part. The volunteers don't generally just drop out of the sky. Generally, you have to do a little work and some digging. The apples don't fall far from the tree. So the way I usually do that is if I don't know some of the rising kids that are coming up, I'll look at who are some of the children that are consistently on A or AB honor roll. Okay? Those children are obviously putting in academic work, and generally they have very supportive parents at home that want to support you in the class, and those parents want to be involved in their children's education. So I will call some of those parents. Also, the students that tend to get our Christ-like Character Award. Generally, those students have a level of service that they're seeing modeled at home, where their parents have servant hearts. And generally, those parents would like to be also serving in your classroom. So use the time in the summer to identify some of those volunteers. Take care of your home repairs. Dentist appointments and doctor's appointments. The other day I looked at both of my children and I said, you're going to stand right here. What is everything you need done on your body, your driver's license, everything? I took my calendar. I called every one of those, booked every appointment for the entire summer. Just because it's difficult to do that while you're also working full time. The other thing that I just have here in the summer is make use of freezer meals. I'll talk a little bit about groceries and meal planning at the end, but it is a good time. That first few weeks of school just seems to be so busy that if you can put a few meals in the freezer and have those waiting for you, that's typically a very good feeling. All right, a successful start. You want to have simple systems for paper flow. Where do the students turn in the paper? Where does it go when it's in process? When you're grading it? When you've recorded it? When you've recorded it but you haven't given it back yet? There should be a very orderly system in your classroom. I know, and sometimes your systems have to change. As your school grows, when I first started, we had 18 students in two classes of sixth grade, so 36 children overall. And within the next year, we went to three classes of 22. So then we had 66. Well, what worked for 36 students and a teacher is very different when you have one teacher with 66 now. So some of the methods where a teacher used to just be able to have one bin and everybody would just put their paper in that one bin, well, I was going to spend 10, 15, 20 minutes every day just sorting papers. It wasn't an efficient use of time. And if you think about if that's what's going on that one day, and you've got 5 days a week and all your weeks in the year, you really need to come up and reevaluate. So as your schools are growing, You may have to be flexible with some of your systems, and certain things may work better than others. Try them out, and you know, if that doesn't work, try something new. Confident guide. For a successful start, you want to be a confident guide that is both consistent and calm. As I talked about when I had the students write a different letter, one of the students wrote about how just in our school, sixth grade is when you go upstairs and you start changing teachers and you have lockers and there's just some new adjustments and responsibilities that are going to happen. And she talked about how that very first day she just had that level of anxiety to walk up the stairs. You know, it's kind of that nervous excitement. She's a great student. But she said when she walked into my classroom, she immediately sensed that calm environment. And I think that that was just really helpful for her to have a good start. So you want to be that confident guy that they feel that they can trust and they can follow you throughout the year. Training, training, training. I know Law 7 we refer to as review, review, review. But training, training, training. The time you spend at the beginning of the year training, like I said, training how you're going to staple. And I make a real big deal out of it. They just can't wait to find the mystery of how they're going to learn how to staple. But time spent training pays off tremendously throughout the year. I take about a day just to show them how to set up their paper for me. And I grade that. I put marks on it. If they are adding things and little hearts and flowers, you know, I just, no, thank you. That's really cute. You know, nice little note. But I need to get everybody kind of into the system as quickly as possible. When you have tremendous growth at a school, you also tend to get students that have not been, you know, are new to your school as well as your classroom. And so you just have to consistently train. But that really does pay off in the long run. One of the things that we have done is we, in the upper grades, have gone to a little agenda for the students. And I know that one year we talked about they didn't think that the students were really using them. They were expensive to buy. Do we just stop using the agendas in total? And we said, you know what, give us one year to really train them how to use an agenda. And they'll get used to that, and that will become something that they really want to use, a little planner. Now, I know just from my own experience, my daughter's planner, you know, highlighted, color-coded, all these little symbols, great. My son really did not use his that much in middle school. But now that he has gotten into high school, even though you've planted those seeds and you try to train, he's now finding in high school he can't live without a planner. And so we have used, from sixth grade on, a planner for each of the students. We also have, if you come to my room, you'll see that I have a very large whiteboard, which is our teaching board, and a smaller whiteboard where I give a snapshot of what our week is going to look like so that at any given time, students can see when deadlines are. We go over that every Monday and take time to take out their planner and walk them through the expectations for that week. Again, it takes time, but you want to over-communicate those deadlines, and it does pay off in the long run. All right, one of the biggest things that I use that we have a lot of schools that come in and visit our school, and a lot of schools do not use this. We use something called the student number. Now, how many people in here use a student number at their school? This will save you a tremendous amount of time. Now, I have talked to some teachers, and they say, well, I want to think of every one of my students as an individual. I do not want to think of them as a number. I do not think of any of my students just as a number. I mean, I think of them as being created in the image of God. And so just the number is a tool. But if you can imagine, if you have three classes of 22 kids and I teach different subjects, if somebody has to put all those in alphabetical order, and you might have four people that its name begins with a B, and can you imagine how long that takes to put those in order? So when we have the students fill out their papers every day, on the first line on the right goes their name, then underneath that is the date, then math is the subject, and then finally the assignment, what lesson and what problems they're doing. But in the upper left-hand corner of their paper, they put their number and their class. We have A, B, and C in sixth grade. So I'll have a 1A, 2A, 3A, down to 22A in my one class that I teach, a 1B, 2B, et cetera, in that, and then one for the C class as well. Now, those numbers, for one, it's very efficient to put papers in order. That way, if a parent pops their head in and says, hey, I have 5 minutes, what can I do for you? You can say, could you take that, take the papers out of the A bin, and just put them in number order. They don't have to know your children. They don't have to know their names. They don't have to try to read handwriting. They just put things into number order. It saves so much time. I use those numbers on about everything. All our textbooks are issued with that number on their binding. So if I find 18C's book out in, you know, an area that it's not supposed to be in, I immediately can come back and say, well, who is 18C? And it goes back to the right person. So I just find that that student number is something that people do not use. But if you get in the habit of using it, I think you'll really like that system. I use that also in my grade book. I print out labels with their name and the number, so everything is done in numerical order. So once those papers are put in numerical order, I can record them straight in my grade book. Then we use RenWeb. I go to RenWeb, can enter those grades. They're in alphabetical order, and it's very efficient. When I try to give the papers back to the students, usually what I do is I call them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I'm giving out papers, so while 1, 2, 3 are having gotten theirs and going back to their seat, 4, 5, 6 know to come, and I can return papers very quickly that way. One of the things that I don't employ, but I know some people at our school do, is they just take popsicle sticks with two jars, and they put those numbers on a stick. And that way, when you pull and you're asking questions to the class, you can pull out a popsicle stick and, you know, 5C, who's 5C? You have to answer that question. Then you put it in the stick of, I've already participated. That way you can control the discussion somewhat so that one person may not monopolize all the discussion time. And that you know that you are then drawing out some of those students who don't typically want to participate. They are going to be called upon. It's also a nice random way if you have to do things like Bible recitation or something where everybody's going to have a turn. It's just a nice way to pull out something and not leave anybody out. All right. In your handouts that you were given, I have something. The very first top is a roster. When I started teaching 6 years ago, I did not have a roster. Does anybody need a handout? I still have some more. You just put your hand. Hi. Okay. The rosters came about. One of the teachers at our school that I teach with on my team, there's three of us that teach together, went and just sat and tried to absorb everything that a more seasoned teacher would show her. And one of the things that she brought up that next year was the roster. I have one of those rosters for my A class, my B class, my C class. I have changed the names on there so that I'm not, you know, disclosing any private names of my students. I used the phone book last night to come up with some people's names just so that nobody would feel like I'm showing my students off. But those rosters are really, I just live by those rosters in my classroom. One of the things that at the very beginning of the year, it just seems like we have a lot of forms that go out and then need to come back in. Emergency contact forms with medical information, athletic waivers, field trip forms when you have that, your midterms when they go out and you need to get them signed and come back, your progress reports. I use them even, I'll take that column and I'll slice the column in half. And I use it for my textbook condition. So I use it for my inventory. I record what condition I gave the book out in, and then next to it, how it came back to me. So I know if I need to assess any damages. And then there's also enough white space that if I need to write, you know, slight water damage or something has happened to a book, I know that then when I give it out to the next student, that they're not held responsible for damage that was done before they got the book. One of the things at the very last day of school, we just have a few minutes together before we go to an assembly, and we have to just verify that their lockers have been cleaned out. Pull a roster, and it's just quick, a roster and a highlighter, and know who's been checked in my classroom. So those rosters are just very valuable. If you don't use them, I know in some of the smaller grades, they print them out in about every size and shape imaginable. I just tend to use that one size. The other thing that our school really encourages us to do is to make positive phone calls. They generally say 22 by August 22. Okay? And they would like us to call every family within our teaching role at least once in the year where we can say something positive about their child. I can't tell you how much that means to the families. I had somebody stop me at this year, and I knew the woman, and I knew she had some health issues, but I couldn't place her in sixth grade this year. I just thought, something's not right. She stopped me. Are you Mrs. Waters? Are you Mrs. Waters? And I said, well, yes. And she had not been very involved because of her health. And she stopped me and she said, I just want to tell you, you called me 2 years ago and left a message about my son. And it's on our answering machine and we listen to it almost daily. So I know it takes time to do, but I do try to call every family at least once in the year with something positive. It does not have to be academic. It can be something that we witnessed on the playground where somebody was just really kind or just let somebody else do something that they wanted to do, or they served their classroom without being asked. So it does not have to be academic, but we do try to call each family one time. I use those rosters to do that. In that column, I'll write the date and, you know, mom or dad, whoever I talked to, or LM, left a message. Okay, or an email or something like that. All right, an organized system. There are several things that I use in my classroom. One is my teacher notebook, which this looks like it's about on its last legs. I probably need a new one this year. As you can see, I have a roster right in the front cover. And I like this because this sits on my desk in a tray with my grade book and my planner. But sometimes I just need to know, you know, if somebody didn't turn in something. Oh, that was Jack or Billy. I also put on here, I guess, whoever is left-handed, because we have some desks that accommodate a left-handed person. So I tend to put that note. On the back are our chore charts. And I think that I've given that in your handout as well. We try to incorporate that the children help clean the room as much as possible. So each person gets a chore. Now, this can be done several ways. The first several years that I taught, I actually just assigned a group of students, and they had the whole week that they had to clean the room, and that was their week, and then they didn't have to do it again. And then I happened to walk into somebody else's classroom, and I saw that they did it by day. And I just thought, maybe by day would be better. So I asked the children, and I said, which one would you like? And they said, oh, by day. I just want to know that Monday is my day, and I just do that one task. I'm the garbage person on Monday. We have a school lunch program where different meals are delivered to the school, and so sometimes you have to bring the cooler in. I assign the trash and cooler typically to a boy. The sweepers and the desk can be boys or girls. This year, we've added something new with folders. We tend to communicate with a Monday folder, still in sixth grade. And then those are due back in on Wednesday. And we just found that it was helpful to have a student be the person that has to do that during lunch. And then now we've decided that we'll also make a student be the person accountable for those coming back in, so that if there's a consequence that needs to be paid, it's a little bit nice to have the student doing that and saying, oh, number 8 didn't turn in. Okay, then that person has to pay the consequence, rather than coming from the teachers all the time. The other thing that took me 6 years to figure this out, but at our school, girls always walk out first and followed by the gentleman, and the gentleman, we have to hold the door for the class. And so going out to recess back and forth, I would always just get two volunteers, and it just seemed like, oh, is it the same guys? You know, why am I always, okay, who wants to do it? And I thought, I have 10 boys in my class last year. I've got 5 days. I need 2 boy holders. Why don't I just assign the boy holders? So it took me 6 years to get there. But now I'm just going to assign the boy holders. So, and they loved it. It was like, okay, you're Monday. And, you know, typically if you have a chore, you're also not then the person holding up recess. So just kind of work through, and I change my chores quarterly, so if somebody feels like they're stuck with a chore that maybe they don't want to do, I try to make it as fair as possible. In my teacher notebook, all the students are told at the beginning of the year, if I'm ever not there, if a sub has to come in, tell her or him to find the white notebook. Okay, so this is important. This holds just a lot of important things to me. In here, I keep my attendance records for all my classes and my study halls that I teach. I have my lunch program, so who's getting lunch for that day. Our Bible passage, we memorize the book of Colossians in sixth grade. And so every quarter, we memorize a chapter. So I keep that in here, and plastic sheet protectors. General rules for the classroom. So if they don't know, should I do this or should I not? It's really in here, and it's communicated well in here. And then just general sixth grade procedures that we have. I have found over the years that I like to have a separate notebook for everything that goes out at that very beginning of the school year. I just call it my first day or orientation. It's bright green. I know where I can pull it on my shelf. But the first few years, I think I had all that in file folders, and I just found that it's taking up a lot of space in my desk all year, and I'm really only going to look at that at the very beginning of the year. So I just wound up putting everything that I need for the very start of school in one notebook, and that system has worked well. I also tend to have an administrative notebook where I keep my contracts, my observations, any forms that I need to fill out. I know we have a form that we can submit every month at the end of the month. And it's the type of thing where if I had to think, did I do marches? Did I do April? Where am I? You know, that would just, it takes almost too much thought. So at the very beginning of the year, I just get 12 forms, fill out every month, keep it in one place. They're all signed. They're ready to go. All I have to do is date them. And that just helps me. If I open up my notebook and I see that March is still in there, then I know I haven't turned March's form in yet. So you might want to have just an administrative file that you can keep all that in. Another thing that I use a lot of are index cards. Now, when I worked at a hospital, one of the senior VPs loved using little 3x5 cards, and he got my boss just hooked on these 3x5 cards. So everywhere, they would put them in their pockets, and anytime that anything came up in the hospital, they'd pull out their little 3x5 card and jot it down. They kept them on their desk for their to-do list. I tend to like 4x6s. They're a little bit bigger. So I have a stash of those at home, and it's just nice. If somebody calls, I just pull one of those out. I guess I like just the weight of it, so it's not just like little scraps of paper everywhere. They're all standard size. I keep a little file box of those on my shelf as well. And it's just something nice that if I know I've got to get 5 things done that day, I can put it on that, throw it away. I mean, it's not much money invested in there. Copies in advance. I try to make my copies as far out in advance as I possibly can. One year before I started teaching full-time, I was shadowing one of the teachers, and I just went ahead and copied out all the math tests for a year. Now, granted, I had to go to my administrator and get that approved because that was some cost in paper and toner, but that really helped me to have all that done in advance. 3 years ago, I had a really bad accident when school finished. I fell off of a curb and spent the entire summer on a hospital bed. And it was just nice to know in the back of my mind that if I couldn't walk in the first day of school for a year, somebody could take over my room without me being there. Everything was completely laid out. My plans were done. My copies were made. Everything was ready to go. So that gave me also a peace when I was just, you know, trying to heal, that I didn't have that frantic feeling. So if you can make some things proactively ahead of time, and some parents that love to copy might be able to help you with that. A communication notebook, I tend to keep just a small, maybe buy just a little spiral-bound notebook or even a composition book that I staple in or write in any communication that I have with parents. So if somebody sends a note in from home, I read it, and then I just staple it into that book. I keep that book for the year, and then I generally just toss the book. But that is just a way that if I ever need to document that, yes, I have had a conversation with a parent, or yes, I have done, or that was communicated to me, I do have that all in one area. So it's just a 50-cent little composition book. The birthdays. This year I did not get to all my birthdays, but I like to write a birthday card for each student in my class. And one of the things that's helpful is with my parent volunteers, at the very beginning, I have a blotter. I usually like to have a blotter on my desk. And they just write in everybody's birthday onto my blotter at the start of the year. And then as I work through my calendar year, I look and I see whose birthday it is, and I can write that person a quick note. And that seems like a small thing, but the students have really said it does mean a lot to them. I'll find if I open a locker, there'll be one in their locker that they've saved for the entire year. I wrote a note at Thanksgiving time. I write these turkey notes that just tell them how thankful I am for them. And I had a mom say, well, that's a keeper. That's something I want to keep for their entire childhood. All right. Plan for your absent students. What we do is we have a missing assignment sheet and also a hanging file right inside my door. If you walk in, there's a big arrow that says absent student work, and it points to a bin. That way a younger sibling or a parent, if they're coming in to get the work, can take the work and take that home to their child. Anytime I give a test and somebody's absent, I immediately write their name on that test and put it in a separate plastic folder so that I know that person still owes me a test. Another thing that I keep in plastic folders are all the medical and emergency medical contact forms. We have had children just with a variety of just medical issues, and you want to know that you have access to that immediately. So it's kind of a folder that is plasticized. I can use it from year to year. I know exactly which folder I can pull and go on field trips. You can just pull the folder and take it with you. Get rid of anything that you're not using. I have kind of a saying, laminate what you love and ditch what you don't. If you don't love it and you're not going to commit to it, it's probably time to just get rid of it. It will make your classroom just feel like it's more free and more empty. All right, my parent volunteers. I realize I just have about 10 minutes. I do want to touch on parent volunteers because I do have volunteers every year. I try to identify them in the summer. I also try to get volunteers at open house at the start of this school year. I think I talked about how I go about identifying some of those people. I pray about it and I leave it to God, though. I do not stress about whether I'm going to have a volunteer or not. He has always been faithful to provide me whatever I need and whoever I need. But a lot of times with volunteers, you have not because you ask not. One year I called a parent, and I just thought, well, maybe I'm just going to call her. I knew her from church. And she almost was weeping on the phone when I called her to ask her to volunteer. She said, I have been praying as to how I can be more involved for my daughter, and especially at her school. And she said, I've just sensed on my heart that God was pulling me out of my church ministry to go be more actively involved with my daughter. And she was so humble. I mean, it just amazed me. And so she faithfully volunteered for me that year. When she couldn't do it, her husband came in for me. And she came to me this year. I have her next child this year. And she said she's already agreed to volunteer. She's come to me and just said, I would like to volunteer for you. Another woman who has come back. I've had several of my volunteers come through 2 and 3 years at a time. So if you make their volunteer work pleasant, they come back, which is really great. But one of the moms was telling me, and she has volunteered for her children from kindergarten through 8th grade. And she would, one year, she asked a teacher, what do you need? And she said, I would really like, she had smaller children that she taught, I would really like if you would come in and really deep clean my room every Friday. And so every Friday she just went in there, she'd sweep, she'd just be, immaculate, trying to clean the things that the students couldn't get. And all the teachers were saying, wow, I wish somebody would come in and do that for me. And she said, well, have you asked? Well, now the teachers are starting to ask, and, thankfully the parents are willing to do that. Respect the time of the volunteers, and I'm taking some of these notes from people that have volunteered for me. It's better to plan for them coming and then cancel if you don't need them than to try to call them at the very last minute and say, can you drop everything and come in and help me? The other thing that this one parent who's done a lot of volunteering said, if you call them and say, can you come in at 1 o'clock, and they're done by 1:30, that really doesn't make sense for her. Then she's got an hour till she can do carpool. So if you would respect their time, that they're giving up their time, give them an idea of how long the task may take, or if they could do it at home for you. Keep it simple and defined. Remember that they are not in your classroom to hear all the instruction that you've been giving to the students and all the expectations. This woman's input was that she is fine with doing true-false, multiple choice, those kind of questions, but really not grading a subjective. That was just a lot to ask for a parent volunteer. Know their strengths. I had one volunteer this year who did not like grading math. Well, I needed her to grade math, but she didn't do it, and she didn't like to do it. And when she did it, I often had to regrade it. But boy, she loved copying. So I had to get her to copying. Another one, she would do math till the cows came home, but she did not want to touch the copier. That was just not her thing. So if you find out what they're good at and how they want to serve, then they're partnering alongside of you, and it's a win-win situation for everybody. The other thing that she said was that just if you have students that are doing a check, trade, and grade type of thing, make sure you train your students so that they don't do a lot of extra marks all over the paper. She said that just really added to her time to then recheck those types of paper. All right, a clean environment. You want to delegate to students, like I showed you in the handout with our chore chart. Make sure your teacher and student areas are well-defined. My desk area, I call my throne. Everything looks like a certain thing. I feel so elevated today. Real subjects. But everything is the throne area. They are not allowed to put anything on the throne. They may not touch the throne. You know, the throne is mine. They actually got me a crown for my birthday this year, so that was really fun. And then when you're leaving, you want to make sure that your board is ready for the next day, that you as a teacher know what you're going to teach tomorrow, so that you don't violate Rule 1 of the 7 Laws. Pitfalls to ponder. Paralysis of organizational inertia. By that means, I mean, you're so scared to begin, you do nothing. And it doesn't get any better. It just goes worse, okay, or it doesn't change. Perfectionism. Some of us struggle with that area, and you want it to be so perfect that if it's not perfect, you're not willing to do anything, and you just have to really give that over to the Lord, and He can change you in that area. Laziness. Some of us just don't want to deal with it at all. It's another thing you might want to talk to God about. And mediocrity. You've chosen to remain satisfied with the level of teacher that you are. I was reading an article with Dr. Oz, if you've ever seen him. I think he's a cardiologist. He had this little acronym that I thought was great. He said that there's things that drive people nuts. They are nagging, unfinished tasks. So I thought that was a great thing. He said you'll find people stressed out about it and having heart attacks about it because those tasks that you don't complete just tend to gnaw away at you. All right, I'll go briefly through some of these. I will be staying till about 5:30. I know we're running short on time, and I know some of you have to get on the bus to come to CCS. With wardrobe, find a style and stay with it and keep it simple. I've found that I would rather buy better quality items on sale and buy fewer of those than buy a lot of cheap things that are going to fall apart. Now, that's just my personal preference. I don't shop in a variety of stores. I find a few that fit me well, a few stores that I like, and I hit their sales rather than shopping all the time for a wardrobe. It does take a while to build a professional wardrobe if you've been out of the workforce for a while. Household duties, chores for the family, schedule first tasks. I typically know towels are Tuesday, toilets are Tuesday, Wednesday are sheets. I just kind of have it planned out every day so that they don't all fall on one day of the week. Find a helper. I have a wonderful friend that we're going to be friends at 19 years in January, and she comes alongside me every week. She has a key to our house. She helps me with meal planning or just making some meals. She does a load of laundry if I need. She does everything. She's my, you know, I need a wife, and she's my wife for those times that she comes. So she has been such a blessing, and I know sometimes we're scared to ask a friend to do something like that. I do not treat her like a hired help. She is like a sister. She's a sister in Christ to me. She does not have school children at our school, but she is willing to partner with me and help me out. I have had people tell me they just wish they had a friend, and they knew that this friend could really use some help, but the friend is too proud to ask for the help, and they're waiting in the wings, ready to help. So if you haven't found somebody, and maybe, you know, you can go with a professional service if you want, but I've been very pleased with just having my friend come. Groceries and meal planning on your handout. One year what I did, I haven't actually used this in a few years, but it was very helpful when I did it. I just basically took 28 meals that I knew our family liked. They're not, you know, tremendous meals. These are not gourmet. Pulled, make sure I had so many chicken meals, so many beef, so many salads, pastas. I just kind of got an assortment, and then I laid it out into a calendar. And then I actually took these recipes and had a week one list, shopping list, two, based on these recipes. When I did use that, it saved me a lot of time. Some of the other things that you might want to consider are some of the, I know we have different places where you assemble meals and then put them into your freezer at one point in time. I know one class gave that to me as a gift for Christmas one year, and that was just a huge blessing. There's one that we have here in the carry area that if you're a teacher and tell them you're a teacher, they will assemble everything for you for free. So that's just something. New moms and teachers have it all assembled for free for you. You just go and pick them up and pay for them. So that can save you time and money in the long run. Additional resources, and then we'll be done. Don Aslett is kind of a funny guy that writes Clutter's Last Stand, if you've ever read it. If you have trouble with clutter, he ran a cleaning company for years, and he has several books out there on kind of organizational from a getting rid of things point. Peter Walsh, who was featured on TLC channel for several years, has written several books now too. There are a few women that run a syndicated column called Buttoned Up, which our papers had for a while and does not have anymore, but I think you can Google them. Also, Fly Lady will send you daily things to get you going to clean up different areas. And even if you just Google on organized classroom, tons of different teachers' classrooms will come up, and you can just see different ideas that they've had in their classroom that have been successful. So I know we're right at 5:20 now, right at our hour. I had hoped to have more time to take questions and answers or answer to some of your questions. I will stick around for about 10 more minutes, and again, I will be available tonight in room 207 at Carey Christian School. Thank you very much.